Do you love freedom? Do you love being clean? Then you'll love Hero Soap Company, made in the USA. Chemical and fragrance free. A portion of each purchase donated to veteran and first responder charities. Initial subscription purchase is matched bar for bar and sent overseas to deploy troops. Let freedom clean. Hero Soap Company.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is James Keenan. Before I bring him on, a couple of announcements. You can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Check out Rockfin. That's where you get our premium content. You can get our regular shows there and all the awesome shows from every creator on Rockfin. And check out the podcast that we feature on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. Those are all on our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. And be sure to follow us on both of our Facebook pages, the Forbidden Knowledge News Facebook page and the Forbidden Knowledge Network. All those links are in the description. And today I want to welcome back to the show James Keenan. He is an author, lecturer, and field investigator. He began his writing career after spending more than 25 years in law enforcement and private investigations. He holds a degree in interdisciplinary studies, and his main curriculum was anthropology and archaeology with a focus on Mesoamerican cultures. He noticed a lack of archaeological investigation into the reason past cultures suddenly disappeared, which led him to research evidence that pointed towards the same catastrophic events taking place at a worldwide level. He has also delved into research of topics of the paranormal and ufology, and he has come to believe that paranormal, ufology, and ancient human history may have more in common than most want to admit. James, welcome back. How are you?
Doing well, Chris. Hey, thanks for having me back on the show.
Of course, man. It's always great having you on. It's great to talk to you again. Last time we spoke was at, I think, the Mega Conference last year. It was a really amazing presentation, one of my favorites. And it's, of course, about the high strangeness in your research surrounding the Uinta Basin and all the crazy stuff that goes on out there. And this year you're actually going to be giving another presentation, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I'll be speaking. They actually made it Friday the 25th of March. It's called High Strangeness Day, and I'll be opening at 8:30 a.m. in the morning.
Awesome. Now, without giving away too much, could you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be presenting this year?
Yeah, the title is called A Lost and Forgotten Past, Confronting the High Strangeness to Understand the Truth. And what it entails are locations all over the world that I've been to where the current anthropological and archaeology premise behind everything and what the archaeologists say doesn't really make sense. And what I want to do is I want to present the additional information and data points that I've collected to show that there seems to be an even more distant history, that it goes much further past what they tell us it does. And then not only is it human history, but it also seems to be other species, mainly giants, that have been around the world. And I'm going to also talk and discuss the Abuelos de Jalisco alien artifacts that are coming out of Mexico, and kind of give people a heads up that a majority of it they're fake, fraudulent, just because it's become a huge moneymaker for the drug cartels that are in that area. And
interesting.
I want to show and present some of the artifacts that I actually believe are real and are thousands of years old, and kind of explain how that fits into the cultures and the civilizations that are in that north central portion of Mexico, and work their way all the way actually up to the desert southwest.
Now, for you, what are some of the most profound findings that point to, like you said, archaeologists have been leading us down the wrong direction when it comes to our ancient past, and that it is much more interesting and fantastic than we could have ever imagined? You mentioned giants. What are some of the other sightings or things that you have come across or researched that kind of puts our ancient past, it gives it a different angle than what archaeologists are trying to portray?
Sure. So in Teotihuacan in Mexico, there are a lot of locations on the site that aren't even talked about or discussed that are underground and shouldn't be, based upon what we're told and what the reason for them that were being created doesn't make sense. The technology that's below ground there is far greater than what we've been told. There's also a location on the Pacific coast of Mexico. It's known as Xihuacan. It's next to Zihuatanejo. And 30 years ago, we were told there was no great civilization or cultures there. Yet we have an area that's about 8 square miles that is nothing but pyramids. And to date, they've only excavated a single pyramid, and it's completely covered in clay that has lasted for over 3,000 years. And I don't know if you've ever tried putting stucco or clay on anything. On a house, it only lasts like 12 to 15 years before you have to completely replace it or at least make patch repair work to it. And this thing's lasted forever. And it's a cultural site where many, many cultures and civilizations gathered from all over Central America, from Mesoamerica, and that was never supposed to happen. So why were they gathering at this one site? It also has the second largest ball court in Mesoamerica after the one in the Yucatan in Chichen Itza. So these are also attached to the giants. We're told that Zelwa, the giant, and six of his brothers, or the seven giants, were the creators of this. But if you talk again to the archaeologists and anthropologists, they say that's just mythology. Yet the Nahua people and the other cultures state this is just oral tradition, which is actual history. And the final site is northeastern Utah, near Skinwalker Ranch and Blind Frog Ranch, where you have these petroglyphs that all over the place show giants. They have 6 digits on their hands. They have these large feet that have been carved into the rock wall or painted on if it's a pictograph. And it's not just in one site or two sites, it's everywhere. And what you see goes along with a ton of the oral tradition of the Shoshone Indians that were the real Utah Territory Indians, not the Ute, who were actually more within the what's now Colorado. So just a ton of this, and it all seems to be connected. You have the giant connection between all these areas. The oral traditions are very similar.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, it seems that they would have all these different types of ancient beings and different types of ancient humans. We find evidence of, like you said, giants, evidence of either humanoids or other types of beings with elongated skulls, evidence of little people. So it just seems like they just had all kinds of different types of beings, whether they were just forms of humanoids or primates or whatever they are, something that we have not categorized. It makes me wonder, you look at Bigfoot sightings today, even sightings of strange little creatures. It makes me wonder if these beings are still here in some way. I think you mentioned underground. Maybe they could have gone underground and they just come out whenever they feel safe. Or maybe they are in a different spectrum of vision that we can't even, we can't perceive because we don't have access to that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so the first point, the underground, over the last couple of years, I know everybody that has followed my work It's changed a lot in regards to Skinwalker Ranch and the Uintah Basin and the mountains that we've been underground now. There are an unheard of amount of cavern systems and tunnel systems and mines that are connected throughout the entire Uintah Basin and mountains. And, you know, it kind of goes into what you said about Bigfoot. I mean, if something like that were to be so elusive, you know, what better way than to do it underground? And there's obviously this potential for there to be a lot of lost artifacts and historical data and records, gold. You have the seven cities of Cibola. Is it really Kershinab, which is supposedly in the Uintah Mountains? That's actually Tamuan Khan to the Azteca, which were the, you know, the Mixteca people. And then in regards to interdimensional, multidimensional, I mean, I think anything is possible. You know, we have NASA investigating these X points, these geomagnetic anomalies that take place that open portals from the sun to the earth. And we, these are our master scientists, you know, investigating this. So I absolutely believe that the potential for that same type of magnetic energy to create these portals is very, you know, capable on the planet as well as above it or outside of it, at least.
Yes. And one of the aspects that's always really fascinated me about these areas in the Uintah Basin and Skinwalker Ranch and just areas of high strangeness in general is when you add in the high amount of UFO activity and things that we are seeing in the sky and strange orbs and lights and all these things you put them together, and it's such a wide range of phenomenon. Say you have UFOs, but then at the same time, you'll have maybe an apparition or a ghost. And I was speaking with some researchers lately that some of them seem to believe that whatever kind of energy that a UFO gives off whenever it's either coming into our reality or coming into the atmosphere, that it may have some kind of electromagnetic effect on the environment, and it could maybe either open portals or cause paranormal activity or some kind of enhanced activity. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think the potential in that type of energy is a lot greater than what we've or what we're currently aware of. Look at gravity. It goes against all other types of energy. It's very low, and it doesn't have this strength that other types of energy do. However, what if that's based upon the fact that maybe the gravity is in multi-dimensions? So at a specific point, it's actually being pulled harder in a different dimension, and that's where that drop in the energetic potential for our dimension is found. And I know that a lot of the physicists are looking at that, and, you know, with the larger colliders that they're using now, they're looking into the fact that, you know, we absolutely don't understand gravity. And maybe in some way the magnetism and the gravity interact together that we just haven't interpreted the data properly and come to understand yet. And, you know, I think we're at this point in time where suddenly all these large discoveries are taking place, and the government or government entities seem to be forced or are being forced now into giving up a little bit more of that information. So hopefully we'll learn what else is available or what current scientists, what their most recent data points show. You know, and not have to wait 10 or 20 years to find that out.
Now, last time we spoke at the UFO mega conference last year, you were going out there with something I believe called a magnetometer. Are you still using this?
I am. So I have the vector magnetometer, which, you know, tests and tells us what the magnetic reading is for that specific part from the Earth's core. And since it's a vector, it can tell us location it's coming from. And I've also added a 3D ground imaging magnetometer now. It's a system that it actually looks into the ground up to 60 feet and can show if there are objects below, if there are cavities below, voids below, if there's water running through the ground. It converts that magnetic reading through the software into a color match. And it's just incredible. We've been using it, on a couple shows. I can't talk about that, but it'll be shown. And in my future presentations coming up, what you're going to see is just, it's simply amazing, because it almost feels like you're cheating. You're able to actually, look into the ground without being intrusive to it and having to dig or anything. So we're capable of seeing if there are, what those anomalies are. With the vector magnetometer, there's something there, but you have no idea what it is. There's this magnetic anomaly below. Is it a huge magnet? Is it maybe a hole that's creating less of a read than what the normal standards should be for that? But now with the 3D ground imaging, I'm actually able to show you exactly what it is, how deep it is, what it looks like three-dimensionally. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. Are you using any other types of equipment whenever you're going out there to do your research?
I am. So lately, if you follow a lot of what's going on in these areas of high strangeness, whether it be the meadow out in Alabama or in Colorado or at Skinwalker Ranch, it looks like whatever this phenomena is, or certain phenomenon, they are capable of being seen in a different light, that it's requiring night vision or thermal vision. So I had before, but it was pretty cheap quality, so I've upgraded quite a bit in order to conduct that type of investigation. And just due to the fact that it seems like a lot of people are starting to see UAP, other types of species, portals, whatever you want to call it or say that you've seen, it seems to require night vision or thermal imaging in order to do that. So, and that means a lot more night investigation than what I have done in the past. And we're coming together. There's going to be a few people that are actually going to start doing this as a group, just because, more eyes than just my two eyes are a lot better, cover a lot more ground in the specific locations.
For sure. Now, you mentioned a couple of places that are probably a little bit new for people that haven't really been researching this stuff. I remember the meadow that you just mentioned was an undisclosed location for a long time. They wouldn't even tell you what state it was in. But now you said, it's in Alabama, of course. But then we have the Blind Frog Ranch, and the UFO conference last year was the first time I've heard about this one as well. And this is a really fascinating area. Maybe for the audience that's not familiar, could you tell us a little bit about each location and what kind of concentrated phenomenon is going on in these?
Sure. So let's take the meadow first. The meadow is out in Alabama. I'm not allowed to disclose the exact location, right, but it's in that state. Trey Hudson, who spoke last year, you were there, discussed this. He's the lead investigator for a group of individuals that come together. What occurs there are a lot of the same unexplainable events that are found around or at Skinwalker Ranch, meaning you have cryptids that have been sighted there. You have this transient energy, whether it be, RF radio frequency, electric field, or electromagnetic field, that shouldn't be occurring, especially out in the middle of nowhere where it's at. And then they, for the first time that I've ever seen, and I think you saw it too, they actually, using thermal imaging, caught three of their individuals walking into a portal and disappeared.
Yeah, this was actually the most amazing footage I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was about 90 seconds of video that they had. And then to hear what those three individuals experienced while they were elsewhere, it was so dark they couldn't see. There were suddenly all these thorny bushes around, and they knew that they were no longer where they were supposed to be. So they backed up, went backwards, and had to circumnavigate all these thorny bushes that didn't exist when they walked into that area. And why they were there was because moments later, well, probably about, 10 minutes, they saw this huge rectangle box.
Yes.
on night vision. And it was there, and we're talking large. And then suddenly it was gone.
Yes, so like this huge black cube.
Huge black cube just hovering above the ground. And then so that's why those three individuals actually walked to that site and then just disappeared. And it's just truly amazing because you hear about this, but you've never seen the evidence like this. And it was just pretty exciting for,
I'm still stunned
to be able to see it.
That I was able to see something like that, because these people were literally, on thermal imaging there 1 second, and then boom, they're not in existence. And, they come back, they pop out. How far was it from their original point where they exited?
It wasn't very far.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they kept the
But it was a good few feet away from where they went in, right?
Right, right. Well, that's because they had to navigate around these thorns that were suddenly where they were. So it took them about 90 seconds to get around it because they said it was in total darkness. They just couldn't see.
Yeah.
That's
incredible.
Yeah, it was an amazing presentation that Trey gave. And now, Blind Frog Ranch, that's 21 miles northeast of Skinwalker Ranch. It's right where the Uinta Basin meets the Uinta Mountains. What's occurred there, people have supposedly seen multiple UFOs at once. I believe it was 9 at one time. The mountains have lit up in this blue light. They've found blue dirt when they were drilling. There is a underground cavern system that we absolutely know about. We've mapped it out. It's about a little over a mile and a half long. Again, remember how I was telling you all these caverns underground. And it's inundated with water. The water apparently has healing properties that have helped people that couldn't walk start walking again. And what's really amazing is there's this Aztec connection and this ancient, not just the Spaniard connection, but also even older to this group of giants known as the Starnak that were miners. And there's this supposed site that is full of artifacts, tons of gold, and it's supposedly around the Blind Frog Ranch area. It's actually two locations. There's a sacred mine, and then there's a sacred site called Kershinab. And so you have all of this coming together, and then you have, there's a show about it. It's Mystery at Blind Frog Ranch. As a matter of fact, season 2 airs tonight. Episode 1 for the second season airs tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. And you've had the people that were working there see these apparitions go flying by in a blue light that look like Native Americans. And you have people that swear that they've seen what is apparently a cryptid that has bent branches into all types of circles above these tall trees that are at least about 8 or 9 feet tall, which you and I couldn't reach. So it's not just a phenomenon, it's multiple phenomena occurring. And again, it's in this area where we have this anomalous energy, which I absolutely believe is below ground on the Uintah Basin and in the mountains.
And it makes me wonder with, you know, portals appearing everywhere and all this, like you said, underground energy, if it makes me lean towards that this, it could be more of these, whatever these entities or beings are, they could be coming through these portals into our reality. And for whatever reason, these portals manifest in this area easier than, you know, anywhere else for some reason. And I'm wondering if you think it's because of something underground or some kind of property that the land has, or maybe something else causing it, because it's either these extraterrestrials or whatever's coming here is attracted to that, or that is, you know, it, the other way around. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm 100% in agreement with you. Either the energy that's there is attracting it or creating the phenomena. And it's a lot. It's UFO Alley. It's one of the major UFO alleys in our country. And in regards to the portals, there is something that is underground that looks like a massive magnet. The way that it acts, it seems like a huge magnet is there. Whether that's natural or man-made or other made, I don't know. But we know that for a fact. This transient energy that's occurring, I don't know how else to explain it unless there was something that magnetic below ground. One of the possibilities that a lot of people are looking into is maybe this was an ancient meteorite or asteroid that struck. Because remember, Lake Uintah was in this location and it was so large it encompassed parts of Colorado and parts of Utah. It was just a massive lake that was, I think it was around about 52 to 55 million years ago. So easily if an asteroid struck in that water, in some parts it was 1,000 feet deep, it would have been difficult for us to find that impact. But its properties from whatever rocks were there, which may have included quite a bit of gold and iridium, because the amount of gold that we're detecting in iridium with certain equipment that I have is just through the roof. It's off the charts from what should occur naturally.
Wow. So it could be, you know, some of the energy that's coming off of these minerals that's maybe causing some kind of electromagnetic disturbance in the area. I don't know.
Yeah, there's several possibilities. It's just a matter of time of, you know,
now
trying to figure out which one or separate it.
We know that our government and, you know, dark factions of it at least have been looking into that area for a long time. And I'm wondering if you have noticed any maybe increase since they've, you know, since they've started doing shows on the History Channel and things like that, or has it remained the same, or do you think that they've become more mainstream about their kind of looking into it? And, you know, how much do you think they know a lot more than they're letting on?
Well, remember that the Advanced Aerospace Weapons System Application Program, ASAP, was taking place on Skinwalker Ranch when Bass was there, when Bob Bigelow owned it. You know, you had the Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies Group. And this private company was conducting all this data gathering and testing and a lot of stuff that I'm sure they haven't discussed for the government. And it was all in that area, you know, so you got to ask yourself, well, why? I have a few problems with some of the people, what they had said, because I've done a lot of research and I've spoken to a lot of people from Bass. So there were some things that didn't really happen that they said happened just to please Bob, you know, Bigelow. But now when you look at what's happening on the show currently, that's all legitimate. I mean, it's been captured on, you know, film by a camera crews. There is something directly above this triangle area at Skinwalker Ranch that continues to open. You see it open and then you see this UAP, and everyone sees it at the same time. It's been captured. There's a lot of unexplainable events that continue to occur. But I think there's some type of cyclical time frame involved when occurrences, phenomena occurs more than other periods. I believe that if you look back from around the mid-1990s up until today and kind of chart that out, you'll start seeing certain patterns that look to show certain time frames when this phenomena is more active than not. And I'm still researching that, so I don't want to go into too much detail yet until I can actually present all the data points on what I've gathered. But I mean, you know, it's just hard to say. It doesn't present itself on cue, and it almost seems that it has a mind of its own or the ability to understand or to know what you want it to do, and then it doesn't do it.
Yeah,
if you want to call that manifesting, maybe.
I've heard plenty of people who've had encounters out in that area say that it's kind of like it feels like this trickster type of grand intelligence that maybe controls everything and even could control your perception of what's going on at times. Have you heard that or ever even maybe felt that at times?
So when I've been on Skinwalker Ranch and around it, I've never had that feeling where I've been watched or something's been messing with me. However, that being said, I've experienced some things that at the time I didn't even realize that it had to do with some type of phenomena that we're investigating because I had never come across it before. And then somebody that was with me talked to another individual or researcher or investigator. And then, you know, you find that out at a later point in time. Or when I present my research, I have people come up to me, like when I was at Phenomicon last year in Vernal. And after I gave my presentation, I ended up interviewing several people that had just a wealth of information. So I think the intelligence or whatever the phenomena is attracted to certain individuals. For what reason? I mean, I'm not sure, and I don't think anyone else is. So I think it's absolutely possible. It just hasn't occurred to me in that situation or in that case where, you know, I felt like I was being watched or something was stalking me or I had something follow me home. Mm. I haven't had that occur yet.
Are there any? Oh, yeah, right. Are there any stories that stick out in your mind, anything really profound or terrifying that's happened to anyone, or stories you've heard about encounters with either entities or lights or UFOs or, you know, anything out there?
So I wasn't on the ranch, but I actually had something that was really strange occur about a year ago. But Chris, I'm saving it for the UFO MegaCon to discuss it then.
Right on.
If you go, I'm going to end my presentation with it. In regards to probably one of the craziest things that I've heard about, and it wasn't experienced by one person, it was experienced by two individuals. So, you know, that's always better. And the two individuals were the one person that I know, I absolutely believe him. He has ties to the ranch, and what they saw was what seemed to be a very, very large animal that has been extinct for thousands of years that shouldn't have been at Skinwalker Ranch. And it makes you wonder, because look at where it's at. It's in a location where there was all this large flora and fauna thousands of years ago. It's one of the best places to get fossils, you know.
So you're talking like a dinosaur or something?
Or earlier towards our period, like a direwolf.
Ah, okay, okay.
And if you think about it, if there's two possibilities, you've already mentioned one. If there's this rift in space and time, is it just crossing through a portal from the past in the same location and just happens to come across our present. And the other possibility is, are some of these creatures, have they remained underground? Just based upon how much cavern system is underground. You know, they talk about, here's another great one. At Bottle Hollow Reservoir, which is 3 miles north of Skinwalker Ranch on at Fort Duchesne on the reservation, there have been several drownings that supposedly were created by this large black serpent that they said was approximately 35 to 40 feet long. The BIA, the law enforcement unit there, actually investigated it, but they won't discuss it. Think about this. The Bottle Hollow Reservoir was this huge canyon. Underneath it are a ton of cavern systems that are inundated with water. Why couldn't something, it would be dark, it wouldn't be able to see anymore, it would come up at night, why couldn't it enter the reservoir through a sinkhole that's been created based upon all the volume of water that's now in the canyon, going into the cavern system that we know has water in it? There's water running through it. So it could be one or the other. It could be both. I think both possibilities need to be thoroughly looked at and examined.
For sure, yeah. And it reminds me of all the mystery, strange big dog sightings and even big cat sightings that people have seen that, you know, didn't believe that those animals were even, you know, existed in that area, or, you know, much larger than any animal that should be in that area. Are you familiar with any accounts of like strange big cats or dogs, anything that's happened recently that you've heard of?
Well, just recently, the state of Utah said that they found a pretty large wolf and they're looking in to see if it's a hybrid or not in that Skinwalker Ranch area. So that's been the talk of the town. More than likely, it's a hybrid that somebody had, but right. it is still the first documented of these wolves coming back into the area. And obviously, it was a little larger than what it should be. In regards to other, there have been creatures. A relative of the Locke family that used to own the ranch before the Myers purchased it. And then the Myers sold it in the mid 1990s. And then after that, you know, when the book was written and everything, then it went to Bigelow. But a member of that family stated that when they came back to visit the ranch, that they came across a huge raccoon that was on two legs. That was about, I believe they said 3.5 to 4 feet high, walking around on two legs, and it came right up to them. So that in and of itself, and what's interesting is they used to have a photo of it. Unfortunately, it's been lost in a couple moves that they've had since then. And I know people are going to go, oh, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, or where's the proof? But I know when I interview people, I know who's, there's obviously that possibility, but these people were legit. They had nothing to gain from it. They don't want to be, you know, known. They obviously shared that and other stuff that I just can't talk about. But at some point, somebody has to come across something of this nature, some type of cryptid, and they're going to get good evidence. I don't know if you saw my one presentation where I started using a radar, a Ka band, 34.7 gigahertz police radar gun like I used to use when I was a police officer. Just in between Skinwalker Ranch and Blind Frog Ranch. And it's a location where I'd come across UAP. Finally, after multiple times there, came into contact with the UAP again, I used this radar gun and it started to interact with the microwave radiation that I was emitting towards it, and captured 92 seconds of this on video. And I'll present some of that at the UFO Mega Conference again. But it's just having to think out of the box and try to start finding ways to capture evidence that's able to be presented, because, you know, nowadays, and I get it. I mean, you show a video or photos and people don't believe you because anyone can Photoshop anything they want. And for me to be able to show that, in order for radar to hit something and bring back a signal, and it was showing that it was moving between 11 and 44 miles per hour, that showed me that it wasn't light. It actually had a surface to the object, to the UAP. And the fact that I used a laser radar gun right before and it didn't interact at all with it, that it required this microwave radiation instead, and it just continuously tried to evade where I was gunning it. And it was just amazing to have this, because again, it's just more evidence to be able to provide and show people. And then, you know, I'm more than happy. I tell people, you know, during the presentation where the location is, because I'm not always there on the base, and I absolutely love for other people to go out and investigate it, research it, and hopefully be able to, you know, get the same data points that I got, because if we can continuously show that this can occur over and over again, I mean, that's, you know, in science, we're actually able to reproduce the outcome, which is what we're looking for.
Yeah, for sure. And from what I hear, one of the more common phenomenon that occurs out there is just orbs or lights that seem to have intelligence to them that may not, you know, be really high up in the sky. They could be even closer to the ground. Have you witnessed any of these, or have heard any stories about these intelligent lights that, you know, sometimes interact with people?
I think that's exactly what this UAP was. So we've been out there, and it's in the same location that I'd seen it several other times. It took a while for me to finally get it to happen again. But yeah, it absolutely, there was, I mean, for that to be able to know that it's being tracked and monitored was just amazing. And I have interviewed other people, and that was the reason why I knew to go to that location. Because they had seen this same type of orb. It comes in two colors in that location. And sure enough, you know, the very first time I went out there at night, I captured it, but it was with one of those GoPros. And it's so difficult, you know, in darkness for it to really show. So it just took a matter of time on figuring out what type of technology to use in order to get the data that was needed.
One of the darker aspects of this, and sometimes it doesn't even seem to fit with the phenomenon, is the animal mutilations and cattle mutilations. Some of them are very bizarre, and I've heard of some where it seems like the animal is just like fallen from the sky out of nowhere. Are you familiar with any cases like this, or strange animal cases, and is it still occurring just as much as it did, a few years ago?
So I don't really, research or investigate much on the cattle mutilations. And I couldn't tell you what's been happening or occurring, just due to the fact that that's just something kind of out of what I want to research and investigate it. Now, if I come across that during, speaking to somebody, I'll absolutely take that information. But usually I'd like to turn that over to, you know, somebody that knows a little bit more about that than I do. Now, that being said, with my background in anthropology and archaeology, my main reason for being up in that area initially was not Skinwalker Ranch. I didn't even know it was there. It was the petroglyphs and the pictographs that were there from the Fremont and the Barrier Canyon style cultures, which were, you know, anywhere from 800 years ago to thousands of years back. And in one of these petroglyphs, it looks like you have this zoomorphic creature that looks like a deer or something else walking through a portal, and then up in the air, it's falling out of another portal upside down and being crushed when it hits the ground. And like you just said, it that kind of fits with what happened at the Garcia property east of Skinwalker Ranch. George Knapp had it in his book, where it looked like a cow died by falling to its death in the middle of a field. Yeah. So to have that seem to be captured thousands of years ago, and I understand petroglyphs pictographs are subjective. You know, everybody can have a different type of interpretation, but this one just, I mean, you look at it and then you hear what you just said and it's like, wow, it almost seems like it's telling a story of that occurring just a couple thousand years earlier.
Yeah, and speaking of the petroglyphs you just mentioned, there seems to be plenty depictions of these portals, but not only that, the strange creatures that people witness around these areas, and even UFOs, and maybe would look like gray aliens too, right?
Absolutely, especially on the Uintah Basin and the Uintah Mountains. And what's even more interesting is when you see that, then what you need to do is go and research the tribes that are in the area and find out about their oral traditions. And you end up seeing that their oral traditions match a lot of what are in the petroglyphs. And you get a lot more detail from that because, I mean, that was their way of passing the stories down, you know, instead of it being written, it was an oral tradition. It's not mythology like the anthropologists and archaeologists tell us. It's their history.
Now, they have a couple of Native American legends that could possibly have an explanation for some of the things going on there, like curses between the Ute and the Navajo. Have you heard of any other Native lore or stories that might kind of explain what's going on with some of this phenomenon?
Well, the Ute. So recently, a lot of the historical data that I had been presenting in my talks and presentations, I learned that some of it was incorrect. I've actually recently learned that the Utah Territory Indians and the Ute aren't the same.
Interesting.
The Shoshone and the Paiute are the actual Utah Territory Indians that lived in what is now Utah. The Ute were actually in Wyoming, mostly Colorado, down into Arizona. There were a few bands that were in Utah. But what happened was when Lincoln put everybody on the reservation, they just bunched a ton of different tribes together on the Ute reservation. And unfortunately, these other bands and tribes became known as the Ute, and they've lost their history and their culture. And so you have this group called the Timpanogos, which were really Shoshone, but people keep saying, you know, they're Ute because they're on the Ute reservation, and they're trying to get that cleared right now with Congress. But we have to change who we are really looking at back in history. And I'm finding out, and it's going to be really great to find out that there's some interesting Paiute and Shoshone oral tradition that may bring a lot of clarity to what's going on in northeastern Utah that the Ute just didn't have because they weren't there. So when we hear this story about the skinwalkers, which are the Yinalushi between the Navajo and the Ute, we're in the wrong area, you know?
Wow, that's very interesting.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of changes. And you know, and that's the great thing about research is I'm willing to say, hey, I was wrong. But I want to present what's right and start maybe going down an avenue, because we've been hearing the same thing. You know, I had in my presentation, I showed photos of what I thought was a Yinab Lushi, a skin locker. Come to find out that those are sacred Navajo shaman that are like the best of the best. It's only positive energy. And we've been using these photos. And if I were to show you two of them, you'd be like, oh my gosh, that's a skinwalker. I thought the same thing, but no, it's embarrassing, you know, using that. And I want to start changing that. I want to start showing what's real and what was just misinterpreted because we didn't understand the culture or the civilization that was here before us. And I think doing that is going to open up new avenues and pathways of investigating and hopefully leading to find out what that phenomena is or what's causing the phenomena.
Oh yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm sure it would be also, you know, really great to talk to some of the local natives about their own history and their own thoughts about what's going on. Have you or any of your colleagues been doing so or plan to?
Yes, quite a bit. So, that's why I knew that I've been presenting some wrong information, and I want to start clearing that up. It was from talking not just to the Ute, to the Tippinogos, and to other Paiute bands and Shoshone bands and tribes like the Snake Band, but it was talking to the Navajo too, because the Navajo came to that to this part of the United States, they were kind of late to the game. You know, they don't show up until about 700 years ago, where the Ute and the Shoshone and the Paiute were here a lot longer. But the Navajo had such a larger population and continue to have a larger population that there's a lot more of that oral tradition that's continued and that we still have. And a lot of the Navajo elders, are in contact with those other groups and have that information that's extremely helpful. And it's just a matter of, you know, they want to get the right information out to us as well. And, you know, in order to provide that, it's going to have to be in both directions. And that's what we're working towards right now.
Very cool. And we were talking earlier, you also told me that you're working on a new book. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like I always like to write fiction, but there's a lot of truth in the fiction. I think it's some of the best way to present it. It's called The Giant and the Golden Underworld. So it pretty much tells you after we've just talked, it's takes place in the Uintah Basin and mountains. It's going to go into real history of the Native Americans from North America down through Mesoamerica. It's going to introduce history of the giants that has been collected. I've been, you know, collecting their migration patterns now for about 13, 14 years. And it's going to go into the real oral traditions that have been talked about by the Paiute, the Shoshone, the Ute, the discuss the Fremont culture and the Barrier Canyon style, who they became instead of disappearing like we thought. They actually migrated southward and became the Aztec. And then these other groups like the Hohokam that were in Arizona, you know, they may have originated out of Mexico and come northward, but then on this migration south, they joined again and went back down south to become the Aztec. And there's this back and forth of the Toltec having come up and become the Native Americans of North America, and then this move back. And, you know, it deals a lot with the weather patterns and, you know, volcanoes that erupted in 1064 here in Arizona that wiped out a lot of territory that very few people know about. So it's just interesting. In my book, I like to add a story to it. I like to make it teenager friendly. So it's going to cater to about the ages of 12 to 18, but anybody can learn the history through it. And it's just, I hope it's a good read, that people enjoy it, the storyline, and also they see the history. And plus, you know what? It's a good way for me to leave hints and clues about what I can't talk about because of NDAs or something like that in the fiction. So it's just great. A matter of you hopefully researching what's in there and, you know, coming away with the truth that's hidden inside of it.
That's great. And you said you've been looking a lot into giants and their migration patterns. That's very interesting. But when it comes to the giants, it depends on, I guess, who you're talking to. Some will tell you that they were pure malevolent, that they were cannibals, that they ate humans. Some will tell you that, you know, it goes both ways. There was, you know, some that were good and some that were bad. Or they have some that intermingled with humans and created hybrids. What do you think about that? Do you think that there was a whole spectrum of giants on either side?
Yeah, it's all three. So it looks like the giants that were here obviously originated from elsewhere. They have a lot of similarities with those that were on the island of Sardinia. You can see it in the oral tradition presented and in the petroglyphs. You have malevolent, you have benevolent. You have those that intermingled with humans because there was a decline. So there was a major catastrophic event and, you know, you took what you could get. So you have different types of giants, just like there's different humans on this planet, you know, different height. You have a group that's called the Sitte Ka that were supposedly redheaded cannibalistic giants. Not sure if the cannibal part was really accurate. I think what happened was there was a group that were headhunters. They did take heads for trophies. And that probably upset a lot of the tribes that they were taking those heads from. So in order to, you know, get rid of those giants, they had to bring a bunch of bands and tribes together. So they said, hey, you know, they're eating us. What better way to, you know, go fight to get that to occur? So you got to really dig a little deeper. But yeah, absolutely. A lot of them were headhunters. You can see that in what's out there in the desert southwest when you look at the pictographs and petroglyphs. And then you have height differences depending on where you're at. They were absolutely taller in Mesoamerica compared to what was here. So we're talking about an older generation being in Mexico, current day Mexico, than what was up here, because there was a reduction in height over time based upon less people to breed with. And then they had to intermingle and that just reduced them. So when the Spaniards were here, they talk about seeing these Native Americans walking around that were 7 feet tall to about 7.5 feet tall, you know? So, and some of them were blonde haired or light brown haired, white skin. So you're absolutely right. It's just a gamut of variations, just like there are with Homo sapien.
That's really cool. Now, I want to talk to close out on about the alien artifacts that you're looking into. You know, you mentioned, unfortunately, many of them are fake. But what about those that aren't? Could you maybe talk a little bit about what ones are the most, the best candidates for being authentic for you?
Absolutely. So we have four locations in Mexico where we definitely know that these artifacts are coming out from. The largest amount of those are from Abuelos de Jalisco, which is in north central Mexico. I have looked at about 200 of these artifacts. I've actually purchased several of them, which are fake. And what occurred was about 85, 90 years ago, these artifacts were in those cities and they were found. And these were more than likely legitimate finds of what looks to be anthropomorphic creatures that you and I would probably call a gray or some type of other alien. And over time, between that 80, 90 year history up until today, we had individuals that realized there was this potential to make a lot of money by selling these as legitimate artifacts. And they presented carbon-14 dating from a couple universities and private companies that were kind of shady because nobody saw how it was excavated and brought out of the ground. Organic glue is not a good way to test for carbon-14. It's better to have bone or wood, which can still be, you know, you can get a 10,000-year-old piece of wood and carve into it, and it would come back 10,000 years old. Well, in the glue, there is hydrocarbon in the glue. Well, any hydrocarbon is going to return a date of at least 5,000-6,000 years old, because it's just what it is. So it became such a lucrative business. And unfortunately, that area is heavily run by the cartel that's there, that I would say 999 out of even more than that, maybe one out of 10,000 artifacts are legit. And those artifacts that are legitimate were mostly the ones that were found 80, 90 years ago and have now made it into the black market. And it's, you know, it's not even black market because Mexico doesn't consider them artifacts. So they don't care if you buy and sell them. You know, you can purchase them online if you want. But there's two types from, the, you know, there's three classes or three categories. The first that I'm talking about is fake, absolutely fake. And that's what a majority of them are. But there's two other categories. The other category is that this is an ancient artifact from at least 9,000 to 11,000 years old, minimum, before the Great Deluge. The second category that we haven't discussed is that there are artifacts out there that are imitations of even older artifacts. So they're a copy of an original, but those copies were made 3,000 to 5,000 to 6,000 years ago.
Wow. And
it's very difficult because they use so much current technology to fake this that you really have to go through a gamut of different types of testing, especially under a microscope. I can look at an artifact now and I can almost tell you, I can tell you that I have seen four different types of artists that are making these because I know how they carve or etch the side of the stone or what they use to cut into the rock surface. So it's getting easier for me to tell the fakes because they have just a few people making them that are so good at it. And in the new presentations that I'm putting together starting in March and moving forward, I wanted to let the public know because a lot of people are, you know, being taken for a pretty decent amount of money and believe that they have a legitimate artifact. And it's, you know, it's just a bunch of crap because you feel bad for them. So if I can at least educate them, and don't get me wrong, out of all the ones I've looked, I've seen three that I believe are 100% legit. I think two of them are ancient, and the third one is one of those older copies, which is just as amazing because you're talking about 3,500 years ago.
Yeah, wow, that is very amazing. Well, I'm very much looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to your presentation and all the work that you're going to be coming out with. If the audience wants to find out more about you, what's the best way that they can do so? Website, social media, all that good stuff.
Sure. Let me look up here. I'm going to read it. It's you can find me at www.youtube.com/C/ James Keenan, Giants and Paranormal.
Nice. And that you got any social or website as well?
Yeah, you can follow me or contact me on Facebook. And that is I'm James Keenan 771 on Facebook. And on Instagram, I go by Dark Shadows and Catastrophe, which is the name of my first book.
Awesome. Well, James, that was fantastic as usual. Looking forward to your presentation in Vegas, and we'll definitely be talking again soon.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. Until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We'll talk again tomorrow.